Good morning and welcome to the Health Matters Radio Show, show 76 on the 28th of October 2019. I hope you're all keeping well and you've had a great weekend. So on today's show, we are going to have a chat about dietary fibre, and also towards the end of the show, we are going to have a chat about vitamin A, what it is, where you can get it from, and some of the dangers surrounding vitamin A. And in the middle, we have our special guest interview of today. Today we have Sabine Hope, and Sabine is a breast cancer coach. So I'm looking forward to finding out more about what Sabine does, and it's great to have you on the show this morning, Sabine.
Hello, Neil. Thank you very much.
And we'll find out more about Sabine's background, her journey, her story, and obviously what she does now to help people in about 20 minutes or so. A quick reminder of the show's social media feeds. On Twitter, it's at Health Radio Show. On Facebook, if you search the Health Matters Radio Show, you can follow the show's Facebook page. And you'll be able to listen again to this show and all previous 75 shows on the iTunes podcast that I have. If you go to iTunes, go to podcasts, type in the Health Matters Radio Show, and you can subscribe to updates. And also on the media page of my website, which is www.i-nutrition.co.uk. And again, if you'd like to contact me through my website, please go to the contact page and you can drop me an email from there. So a quick disclaimer before we kick the show off. The purpose of the Health Matters Radio Show is to provide you with competent information on the subject matters that we cover, and to help educate and inform you in ways that you might be able to improve your own health. However, this is on the understanding that I am not engaged in providing medical advice, and the content of the show should not be treated as a substitute for such. If you have any concerns about your general health, or you require medical or other expert assistance, please speak to a suitably qualified healthcare professional, which in many cases can be obtained by dialing 111 or speaking with your local pharmacist first. All the content is provided for general information only, and I encourage you to do your own research. And the show is based on my knowledge, my research, my experience, and often my opinion. And as such, I disclaim any liability that is incurred from the use of or application of the content of the show. Hokey dokey. So on to fibre. Now, most people have heard about fibre, and not many people really understand what fibre is. And certainly for new clients that I meet for the first time, looking at food diaries, I would say virtually every single one is deficient in fibre. And this is normally because they're not eating a lot of vegetables, they're not eating much fruit, they have a processed food diet. And actually, a deficiency in fibre can cause some significant short-term and also longer-term health issues as well. So when we talk about fibre, we're talking about dietary fibre. So dietary fibre is the term that's used for plant-based carbohydrates. Okay, so unlike other carbohydrates like sugars and starch, these plant-based carbohydrates, this fibre, is not digested in the small intestine. And so it reaches the large intestine. And the fibre is found in plant foods like vegetables, fruits, whole grains, beans, legumes, nuts, seeds. And they're really, really good for you. So it's a carbohydrate that we can't digest. And actually, when you look at animals, they have a skeleton to keep them up. Well, plants don't have skeletons. They use fibre for their structure. And then when we consume the fibre, it's obviously beneficial for us. So there are three types of fibre, and they all have different functions in our body. So the first of these is called soluble fibre. Now, soluble fibre is a type of fibre that dissolves in water. And this type of fibre can help you to feel full. It can help to reduce constipation because it helps the transit time of your waste matter through your body. And some soluble fibre is found in fruit, oats, barleys, and also psyllium as well. And the good thing about fibre, excuse me, is that it can help to reduce cholesterol levels if you've got high cholesterol. It can also help to stabilise blood sugars as well. So if you've got diabetes or you have issues with blood sugar levels, then a diet high in fibre can help to control blood sugar levels as well. The next type is insoluble fibre. Now, insoluble fibre absorbs water, but it keeps its structure. So this is found in things like whole grain breads, whole grain cereals, nuts, seeds, wheat bran, and also the skin off of fruit and also vegetables. So it doesn't dissolve in water, it absorbs water. And as such, it helps to soften the contents of the bowel and it helps to keep you regular. Resistant starch is the last one. And resistant starch, like the others, is not digested in the small intestine and makes its way to the large intestine. But it's where our gut bacteria feed off of this starch, this fibre. And it's really good for bowel health. And it's really good for your microbiome, for your gut bacteria. And we live a very symbiotic relationship with our gut bacteria. So when they're happy and healthy, generally speaking, will be healthy as well. They have a massive influence on our overall health. And when our gut bacteria is or has issues, then generally speaking, it will have an impact on our health too. Another important benefit of resistant starch is that it ferments and it produces substances that help keep the lining of the bowel healthy. And you can find resistant starch in things like undercooked pasta. I think it's called al dente. Underripe bananas, cooked and cooled potato and rice are quite high in resistant starch. So as I mentioned, fibre is important because it is actually good for your gut, it's good for your bacteria, it's good for your bowel movements, but it's also linked to a lower risk of obesity, a lower risk of type 2 diabetes, and also a lower risk of heart disease and cancer. And because it's good for the digestive system, it also can help reduce the risk of things like hemorrhoids. But because high fibre foods, so you know, generally vegetables and also some fruits, because they're high in fibre, they're also quite filling. And they can help the individual maintain a healthy weight, because if you're full up on vegetables, you generally won't overeat. And also foods that are high in fibre are also good sources of vitamins and minerals. And this is one of the reasons I'm really not into these low-carb diets, because low-carb diets encourage people to not eat vegetables and not eat fruits, because obviously there's sugars and carbohydrates in them, albeit they're very good sugars and very good carbohydrates, natural. And when people cut out big food groups like carbohydrates, then they tend to find they become deficient in vitamins and minerals, because there's a lot of vitamins and minerals that you find in fruits and vegetables that you just don't get in meat-based sources. So here's a few other benefits of having an adequate, shall we say, fibre diet. And when we talk about adequate, really for most adults, we should be getting around 30 grams per day. Now, most people that I meet for the first time as a potential client really are not getting anywhere near that. They're normally, if they're lucky, they're in the teens and in the low teens, and very often they will be actually in single figures. And having a fibre-deficient diet, without a doubt, has a massive impact on our health. So, as I mentioned, fibre will help you to lose weight. And it does this because it helps you to fill up faster, and it keeps you satisfied for longer. And actually, some fibre prevents the body from absorbing some of the calories from the food that we eat. So the fibre binds with fat and sugar molecules as they travel through the digestive tract, and they can reduce the amount of calories that we actually absorb. Fibre can, as I mentioned, cut your risk of type 2 diabetes. And there was a study where people that increased their fibre intake, and this is looking at more than 26 grams a day, lowered the odds of the disease by anything up to 20% compared to those who ate less fibre. And they believe that it's because fibre helps to keep blood sugar levels steady, as well as helping you to not overeat. That's the reason why they think that it helps to not to actually reduce the risk of type 2 diabetes developing. Have a drink, excuse me a second. have a slight frog in my throat, as you can probably hear. Fibre helps you to lower your odds of heart disease. It's estimated that for every 7 grams of fibre eaten daily, the risk of heart disease drops by 9%, according to the BMJ. There was a number of studies on this, and that's partly due to the fibre's ability to actually sop up and absorb excess cholesterol in your system and take it out of your body before it can clog up the arteries. And actually, fibre is really good at reducing down high cholesterol because it absorbs bile, holds on to the bile, and the body makes bile from cholesterol. So when you pass out that bile as part of your motions, then the body has to make more bile. It does so from taking the bad cholesterol out of the bloodstream. So it's not a quick fix, but actually an increase in fibre can help to reduce high cholesterol levels. As I mentioned, it helps your gut bacteria. Now, it's estimated that we have around 10 trillion human cells, and we have around 100 trillion bacterial cells. So our bacterial cells are predominantly in our gut, in our large intestine, outnumber our human cells about 10 to 1. And when they're happy, generally speaking, we're happy. So the bacteria eat the fibre, they gobble up the fibre that they need, that ferments in the large intestine. And as a byproduct of their metabolism, they produce short-chain fatty acids. And these short-chain fatty acids have a host of benefits, including reducing systemic inflammation, which has been linked to things like obesity and nearly every other chronic health issue. If you look at the high-fibre diet, the high-fibre Mediterranean diet, that has been associated with higher levels of these short-chain fatty acids. But you've got to keep it going. You can't just go to 30 grams one day and expect to see immediate changes. You've really got to keep up the fibre intake. Fibre can also help reduce the risk of certain cancers. Now, every 10 grams of fibre that you eat is associated with a 10% reduced risk of colorectal cancer. And also a potential 5% risk in breast cancer as well. And that was a study published by the Annals of Oncology. So obviously colorectal cancer is a very obvious one. But again, the benefits of fibre to our gut bacteria obviously helps with other health issues as well. And also, if you have a diet that's high in fibre, you'll generally be eating a diet that's high in fruit and vegetables. And these fruits and these vegetables are really high in antioxidants, because we've covered antioxidants on a previous show. You know, human beings don't produce antioxidants. We have to get them from our food. And those antioxidants are the things that give fruit their colour, the carotenoids. So fruit and vegetables are high in antioxidants. They're high in phytochemicals. And it's those things that are thought to help reduce the risk of certain cancers. As I mentioned, it will help you to be more regular. So if you suffer with constipation, and actually constipation is a very common complaint, a lot more common than people think, then if you have a diet that's high in fibre, then it will help you to go on a more regular basis. It will help your poo to be more soft and bulkier as well. And again, it keeps the toxins out of the body. Because lots of people, we're coming up to that time of year, particularly coming into the new year, where we have all these stupid fad diets that are going to hit the market, and juice cleanses and all these stupid things that are out there, in my opinion. Fibre is a natural cleanser. Fibre is a natural detoxer. It naturally scrubs and it promotes the elimination of toxins from your digestive system. Fibre soaks up potentially harmful compounds. It holds on to things like excess estrogen, unhealthy fats. It holds on to the bile, which obviously then, once that passes out of your body, all these toxins are, the longer they're in your body, things like BPA, mercury, pesticides, those are things that we consume that are part of our daily diet. Thankfully, not in large amounts, but the longer these chemicals and these harmful compounds are in the body, the more chance that they're going to cause harm. Your liver dumps all these toxins into the digestive system, fibre holds onto them, and you pass them out. If you don't have enough fibre in your diet, guess what? They get reabsorbed and they go back to the liver, which is not a good situation. So the more fibre you've got, the more toxins you can get rid of. So as I mentioned, fibre, about 30 grams a day for an adult is a good target to aim for. If you've got IBD, if you've got any sort of bowel conditions, you need to be cautious. You know, things like colitis or Crohn's, you need to be very cautious with fibre. But really, we get this fibre from plant-based sources. So remember, whole grains, whole grain-based foods, so fruit, vegetables, vegetables with a skin on. And if you can't do that, if you find that you're struggling to get your fibre up, then things like psyllium husks are a really good way to boost your fibre intake, and also chia seeds. Chia seeds are amazing. But also, just remember, you can get it from things like peas and beans and nuts and seeds as well. So just eat natural foods, increase the amount of natural foods that you do eat, and you will find that your fibre increases pro rata. So I hope you found that interesting. After the break, we are going to go on to our guest interview with Sabine.
A serenade, laying everybody low with a love song that he made. Find the streetlight, steps out of the shade, says something like, "You and me, babe, how about it?" Juliet says, "Hey, it's Romeo. He nearly gave me a heart attack. He's underneath the window." She's singing, "Eli, my boyfriend's back. You shouldn't come around here singing up at people like that. Anyway, what you gonna do about it?" Juliet, the dice was loaded from the start, and I bet many of you exploded into my heart. And I forget the movie song. When you gonna realize it was just a Juliet. Come up on different streets, they both were streets of shame. Both dirty, both mean. Yes, and the dream was just the same. And I dreamed your dream for you, and now your dream is real. You look at me as if I was just another one of your deals. When you can fall for chains of silver, you can fall for chains of gold, you can fall for pretty strangers and the promises they hold. You promised me everything, you promised me thick and thin, yeah. Now you just say, "Oh, Romeo, yeah." You know, I used to have a scene with him, Juliet, when we talks like the talk on the TV, and I can't do a love song like the way it's meant to be. I can't do everything, but I'll do anything for you. I can't do anything except be in love with you. And all I do is miss you and the way we used to be. All I do is keep the beat, bad company, and all I do is kiss you through the bars of a rhyme. Julia, I do the stars with you anytime. But Julia, when we made love, you used to cry. I said, "I love you like the stars above. I love you till I die. And there's a place for us. You know." Thank you. struck Romeo. He sang the streets a serenade, laying everybody low with a love song that he made. Find a convenient street light, steps out of the shade, and says something like, you and me, babe.
Romeo and Juliet by Dire Straits. You're listening to the Health Matters radio show with me, Neil De Silva. A quick reminder of the show's social media feeds. On Twitter, it's at Health Radio Show. On Facebook, search the Health Matters radio show. And you can listen again to this show and all previous shows on the media page of my website, which is www.i-nutrition.co.uk. Or on iTunes podcast, go to iTunes, go to podcast, type in the Health Matters radio show in the search bar, and you can listen to all the previous shows there, and you can subscribe to the podcast too. And as normal, if you'd like to contact me away from social media, please do so via the contact button on my website. So on to our special guest interview of the morning. Today we have Sabine Hope. And as I mentioned, Sabine is a breast cancer coach. And common to all the guests that come on my show, they've generally been through a journey. And we're going to find out more about Sabine's journey in a moment. But that journey has taken them to where they are now. And they are kind of quest their mission to help other people who are also going through that same journey. So good morning, Sabine. It's an absolute pleasure to have you on the show this morning.
Thank you very much. It's great to be here.
So I'm looking forward to finding out more about you and obviously how you help people today. And as I mentioned, you're a breast cancer coach. So that's quite a big, quite a deep role that you play. So I'm fascinated to find out how that journey develops. So that's kind of start at the background. That's sort of start at the beginning. Obviously, as people will can hear, you're not from the UK.
No.
So you're from Germany.
That's
so,
right.
So give us some background as to what brought you to the UK, how long you've been here, what you did while you were here, and then obviously take us in that journey towards why you now do what you do now.
Sure. Yes. Of course. Yes. You will hear my accent that I'm not from around here. And I have been over here for 30 years, but you can still hear it. I came over when I was 19 years old. I came for a gap year. I thought it was a good idea to learn the language. Mm-hmm. And I joined an organization called Camp Hill Communities, where we share our life, our daily life, our family life with people with learning disabilities. So I lived in a household with adults with learning disabilities and a family who ran the household. And that's what I did. And I loved it so much. I wanted it to stay that way. So my gap year became, almost 30 years now. Mm-hmm. I've worked for this organization for a very long time, sharing my life with young people and adults with learning disabilities. I had two boys. They're older teenagers now. And that's how they grew up. All along this journey, I've always been fascinated with health and well-being. I've always been into health and nutrition. I've read anything you could possibly read. Mm-hmm. I've lived on an organic farm. I've never put any sort of chemical skincare on my skin. Already as a teenager, I don't quite know how I knew this. Mm. I somehow knew that was the wrong thing to do and that I should just use organic produce and so on, so on. So that has been my life, really.
So how did you find life on the organic farm?
Oh.
Compared to, you know, the sorts of food that we get mass-produced today.
No, completely different. We were pretty much self-sufficient with everything we had. So we lived a very seasonal lifestyle, you know, whatever grew seasonally is what we cooked and what we ate. And and that was fine. That's just how it was. And you know, going to supermarkets and seeing everything packaged in plastics was quite shocking, really. Mm.
Yeah, I bet. Mm. And we were talking during the break about having and eating domestically grown, whichever country you live in, eating domestically grown fruits and vegetables. But as you say, today, you know, fruit and veg is mass-produced, pesticides and other things, and then it hits the supermarket shelves and it's packaged in plastic and all that. So it must have been a refreshing change to actually live on that organic farm. And you did training in a type of mindfulness movement.
Oh, yes, that's right.
I was going to pronounce it, but I won't embarrass myself by trying to pronounce it.
So it's called Eurythmy, and that is Greek and stands for, translated as the beautiful rhythm.
Okay.
And it's not very commonly known, but if you've heard of Steiner Education, World of Schools, it is commonly taught to children in Steiner schools because it educates the whole body rather than just the brain. So you learn a lot about rhythm, about movement with music. And yeah, so it educates the whole body. But if you watch it, it is an art. Mm-hmm. It is a type of movement. You can watch it as an artistic performance. And that's a 5-year training that I did. That is right. Yeah. And yet nowadays, in those days, we didn't really use the word mindfulness. But nowadays, when I think about it, I would definitely say it's mindfulness and movement.
And how long ago did you do that training?
That's a while ago. So I was 21 when I started that training.
Yeah.
So that was sort of after my first 2 years in this country.
So mindfulness is obviously quite a commonly used term now.
Yes,
but it sounds like they were very ahead of the game back then.
Yes. No, it wasn't commonly known at all.
Great. So take us now towards the more the current day. Obviously, you are your breast cancer coach. So between this time when you came into the UK and you did all these great things, obviously something has happened to take you down this route. Perhaps you can tell us a little bit more about what's led you to doing what you're doing now.
Yes. So, yeah, as I explained, I thought I was living a very, very healthy life, very, very healthy lifestyle. A few years back, I thought it was time. I was 45 to get a mammogram. I thought that's what you do. You go to the GP and you ask for one. But then I was told that I was too young and that I had to wait 5 years. That was, you know, the average in this country when you start with this kind of thing.
Really?
So that was fine. I went back home, thought, okay, fine. I've, you know, done what I need to do. And literally a week later, I had a lot of pain in my breast. And it was like an inflammation. You know, all mums will know what a mastitis feels like.
It
was exactly like that. So I went back to the GP. They gave me antibiotics that didn't do much. But once you have something in your breast as a woman, then you're in the system and then you get sent to all the appointments.
Right.
So I was sent off to hospitals to all the appointments. But everyone kept telling to me, including the consultant, don't worry, cancer doesn't hurt. It's a cyst and so on, so on. But then already when it came to the stage of ultrasound, they did a biopsy straight away and then told me that there was something that was not quite right. There was a lump in my breast. And yes, every woman who's been there will sympathize and remember the feeling of being told, we can't tell you what it is. Come back in a week's time and bring somebody with you. Please don't come on your own. So then you know already.
Wow.
You can tell I'm already getting a bit emotional talking about it again. And then I would say to everyone at this stage, that is the worst time when you don't know yet. You know, when you have no idea how big or how small it could possibly be, and you go from one appointment to the next. Once you know, once you have a bit of an idea and you have a treatment plan, then you're already, you know more where you're at.
And I've never been in that situation, but I would guess if you're in that situation and you're given a diagnosis of any type of cancer, the immediate natural reaction is to think, you know, it's terminal.
It must be an absolute
bombshell. Yes.
And that was exactly how it was, because there is absolutely no family history in my family of any type of cancer. I had not even met anybody, you know, with that experience.
Yeah.
So for me, it was, you know, it felt like, I'm dying. That's it.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And as far as I know, and I'm not an expert in breast cancer, but I do know a bit about it. it can be hereditary, can't it? If you've got mother or aunt or it's in the family as a woman, your risk doesn't mean you're going to get it by any means, but your inherent risk is higher.
It is, that's right. So I didn't have that inherent risk, but luckily we know also nowadays, maybe we'll come back to that a bit later, that even if you have that risk and you have the breast cancer gene, it doesn't at all mean it will express itself.
Absolutely. Okay, so you've been given this diagnosis. What was your immediate reaction at that point? Some people, obviously it can hit hard, and some people can think, right, okay, I'm going to deal with this and I'm going to fight it and I'm going to beat it, and they can be very upbeat and positive. What was your reaction when you were given the diagnosis? What was going through your mind?
I went up and down very, very quickly. Within minutes, I could be either quite strong and thinking, you know, we'll get through this, to being absolutely terrified. It was very difficult. And from appointment to appointment, the news was always slightly worse. And of course, having my boys were 15 and 12 at the time, 11 and 12. And they had lost their dad already, so you can imagine what went through my mind.
Yeah,
you know, also on their behalf, how would I tell them? How would they deal with it? And adding more trauma to their life.
Yeah.
So that was all quite tricky. So in the end, I knew that I had to have a mastectomy and complete lymph node clearance. This is what happened, but. Looking back now, the diagnosis and the prognosis was not quite good, really, for all the fears I had to start with. Yeah. And my boys coped incredibly well. And what is really extraordinary about my story is that the inflammation that I had in my breast had absolutely nothing to do with the cancer. So it's just still fascinates me how somehow my body was trying to point me to checking. You know, I had been a week before to ask for a mammogram. I was told to wait 5 years, but just imagine if I hadn't had this inflammation, then it would have been another 5 years.
So when the oncologist said cancer isn't painful, that was true. So the pain you were getting wasn't actually linked to the cancer, but it was your body's way of reacting to
something
that was going on that wasn't normal.
That's right.
Wow. I don't know, but how often are scans done, breast scans done?
I don't actually know what it is regularly if you haven't got a diagnosis. But of course, once you have had a diagnosis, then it's at the very least once a year.
Okay. Because on last week's show, coincidentally, we were covering cervical cancer. Mm. And obviously, there is a regular screening program every 3 years, and then it goes to every 5 years, depending on your age. I just didn't know if there was a regular scan schedule, breast scan schedule, whether it was every 5 years as a matter of course, or you only have a breast scan if you feel that something's not quite right. I don't know.
I only know it for women with breast cancer, it is definitely once a year. And for some women, depending on how high the risk is of recurrence, even more often than that. Regular checkups.
So you had the mastectomy done, you had the lymph node clearance done. Were you given the all clear at some point where your oncologist said, that's it, you know, you're in remission now and you're out of the woods?
Yeah. Well, you never quite know about the all clear. It's the all clear for that moment in time. And then they give you a prognosis of with the diagnosis, how likely you are to have a recurrence or not. And then, of course, they give you advice on whether you should be having chemotherapy or radio or drugs, you know, like tamoxifen, a very well-known anti-breast cancer drug.
Yep.
So in my case, I was very lucky. I wasn't recommended chemotherapy. Okay. Because the tumor that was found was relatively small. And the same applied for radio. They work it out in their data system, you know, how much of a help chemotherapy could actually be in the end. Mm-hmm. So anything under 4% added to your prognosis, they don't recommend it to you then. And that was the case with me. So I feel really, really lucky also that I didn't need to go through that.
And I guess part of that's for time reasons, part of it's financial reasons from, you know, the healthcare system's point of view, but also chemotherapy does pretty awful things to the body. The side effects are quite severe, aren't they? So they can avoid someone going down that route, if possible, I guess they will do.
I think so, yes. And you need your immune system as strong as possible for recovery. And, and of course, chemo gives that a massive beating.
It poisons you, basically, doesn't it? Okay, so you'd had the treatment, you'd had the operation, you were told the good news that obviously it had been dealt with. Most people would then just carry on with their life as normal, but obviously you didn't. You did a lot of research into the cancer. You retrained as a health coach, and then obviously as a cancer coach. I've not heard of a cancer coach, so perhaps you could tell us a little bit more about that.
Yes, I can do. So I really went into research mode, and I felt that the cancer came with a message to me. As a kind of a wake-up call. And I really believe now more and more that whatever symptom we experience in our body is like a message that our bodies want to give us. You know, like Neil said earlier, lots and lots of people suffer constipation. Mm. And we just assume that's normal. You know, we live with so many symptoms that we just assume are normal. But I really, really firmly believe these are all messages for us that we need to listen to. And if we don't, those messages get louder and louder and louder until one day it might be something as serious as cancer that maybe we could have avoided a long time previously if we had listened to the smaller voice of constipation, of, I don't know, whatever it is in our lives. There is so many, you know, constant chest infection. You know, people have different
headaches, those
migraines,
sorts of things.
Headaches, that kind of thing. So I really felt very clearly there was a message in this cancer. There was a wake-up call. And, you know, I said already I was always into health and well-being. And I thought, why me? This is just, I mean, I'm sure everybody with a diagnosis for cancer thinks that is completely natural. But, you know, thinking of the nutrition I had, the lifestyle I had, the family history, or rather no family history, I just thought, why me? And I asked the oncologist, just, you know, out of interest, out of curiosity, and she said, oh, don't even think about it. It's just a random thing that your DNA does. And I wasn't going to have that somehow because is there really a random thing that your DNA does? You know, I'm not a medical professional. I don't give medical advice. But to me, that just sounded wrong. Mm. You know, yes, your DNA might do all sorts of things, but what are the causes for that? So, yeah, I then retrained to be a certified health coach. And then I did a training to be a certified cancer coach, which is more commonly known in the States than it is here.
Okay.
That people with a diagnosis for cancer look for a cancer coach to support them through their own journey. And normally, all my colleagues who are cancer coaches in the States are people who have had cancer themselves.
Been through that journey.
Yeah, been there. And you know, have done the research, have gone on the journey to support others,
and also experience the emotions of it. You know, I think having that whatever you do, having that life experience gives you that empathy.
Yes,
you know, rather than just learning it from a textbook and doing a course, you've actually lived it, and you have experienced the highs and the lows of going through that experience. Mm. Okay, and so from becoming a cancer coach, you developed your program. I think it's called From Breast Cancer to Butterfly.
Yes, I call it From Breast Cancer to Butterfly, yes. Okay. So as such, as a cancer coach, I could support anyone with any diagnosis of cancer, because what is special about cancer coaching is not what type of cancer you have, what type of tumor you have, but who you are as a person. So the oncologist is trained and an expert, and the surgeon, of course, in dealing with the tumor that you have. But they're not necessarily an expert in supporting you as, I'll call it now, the host to the cancer.
Yeah.
For some reason or other, when you've had a diagnosis, you are the host to this tumor. this tumor is a very unwanted guest.
Yeah.
And what can we do for you as a person, as a holistic whole, to help you to never, ever invite this unwanted guest back into your body, into your system?
Okay.
So whilst the oncologist gets rid of the cancer cells, does all the work they need to do, then what about the rest of you? Who supports you with that?
Yeah.
And people can be quite lost, very understandably. It's a very scary, a very confusing time. And you hear so many things, you know, you hear such a lot of also conflicting advice. So, yeah. For example, about diet. So I have obviously concentrating on breast cancer because that is my story.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And this is why I've developed the program from my research. I've sort of summarized my research and my experience to sort of five essentials, I call it, or five shifts.
Mm-hmm.
So, and those five shifts, I call them nourish, flourish, cleanse, move, and love.
Okay.
So, because I really want to make it simple, you know, when you've had a diagnosis and you're recovering, you know, you don't want to be on a strict, tough diet that makes life rough and hard. You know, you want to find a lifestyle that can bring you joy, because joy in itself supports the immune system, boosts the immune system. So nourish, the essential of nourish is all about nutrition. But again, you know, no one size fits all. Mm-hmm. It is really seeing who you are and what type of support you need to optimize your diet in a way that you can still enjoy eating.
Yeah.
And flourish is all about emotional health and emotional well-being, about stress management. That's something I have learned for myself, how absolutely massive that is. It doesn't matter how many green smoothies you drink.
Mm-hmm.
If you are unwell emotionally, if you experience a lot of anger, grief, you know, in a way, unprocessed, undigested emotions. I believe we need to digest emotions in the same way as we digest food.
Mm-hmm.
And if that hasn't happened and you have a lot of stuff sitting in you that you haven't dealt with, that's a massive factor in cancer, mm-hmm. in my opinion, mm-hmm. in my research. So that's flourish, and also sleeping patterns, stress management, trauma, grief, all comes into that aspect of things, into that essential. Cleanse is all about detoxing and cleansing. And a little bit like Neil explained yet earlier about fiber, it's for me not about doing some rough juicing cleanse. Mm-hmm. It is really about sort of the daily life aspects to add into your life to live a more clean, a less toxic lifestyle. What kind of skincare, shampoo, cosmetics do you use? What do you eat to support your body to cleanse? What are the sort of artificial hormones, especially estrogens, that you might be taking in to pesticide-laden food, and so on, so on. And then there is move, which is all about exercise and movement.
Mm-hmm.
That's a little bit more straightforward, of course, except, again, it is so important that there's joy in movement, that we don't put ourselves through some tough exercise routine that puts more strain on us. And the last one is love, and that's all about your passion in life, really, what you get up for in the morning. You know, I've met many people with a cancer diagnosis who've sort of lost their mojo a bit. And for one person, that might be connected to spirituality, and another person might not be spiritual at all. And it might be about a change in their job, or something to do with their children, or wanting to see their grandchildren grow up, or wanting to learn to play an instrument.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what is it really that you want to get up for in the morning? And I do see many people with a diagnosis who sort of lost their golden thread a little bit in life.
Yeah, yeah. Wow. So nourish, flourish, cleanse, move, and love.
That's right, yes.
That's really, really good. And I think it's really nice, because it does deal with the physical side. So, the nutrition, you know, what you feed and fuel your body with, in as much as obviously an oncologist and cancer treatment deals with the physical side of dealing with the cancer. But as you quite rightly say, there is the emotional side, there is the spiritual side, mm. there is the psychological side.
Mm.
You know, even when you're given the good news that perhaps it's gone into remission or gone, you know, the physical side is dealt with, but it's the other parts that linger on, I guess.
That's right, Neil, and that's often the toughest time for women. You know, once you're released from active treatment, you've had all this support. You're in a kind of a vacuum almost, yeah. You know, where you're looked after, you're treated. And then suddenly you're told, all right, back to normal now.
Yeah.
You're good to go.
Yeah.
And that's often the toughest time for women. Because what does it really mean? They're no longer the person they used to be. And for a while they might think, okay, I'm forcing myself to go back to normal.
Yeah.
And it is not the same, you know. And in my opinion, there's probably a new normal out there that could be much more healthful, much more joyful than that back to normal. But it's often a journey for women to realize that back to normal is maybe not what they're looking for.
Mm.
And it can come with a lot of difficulties that time.
And, I guess from a psychological point of view, if you've had operations, if you've had a mastectomy, for example, that can have a huge impact on your self-confidence, the way you feel about yourself.
Yeah.
So whilst you might be cancer-free, it doesn't mean that suddenly life goes back to normal. There's a lot of other issues to deal with that aren't physical.
Absolutely. That's very, very true.
It's very powerful.
Yes. Yes.
So can you give me an idea? Obviously, you're not mentioning individual cases or clients, but can you give me some idea of some of the successes that maybe you've had with some of your clients?
Yes. So the successes are mostly around women recognizing that they need to look after themselves and that self-care is an absolute priority.
Mm-hmm.
And on some level, I wish I could help women with this to discover that before they have a diagnosis for breast cancer. But I know with myself, if somebody would have said to me years ago, you know, you're not looking after yourself enough, I would have said, well, what choice do I have? It is as it is. I'm very busy. I'm a mom. I've got a job. You know, it is as it is. But for women to wake up and to see that self-care is an absolute priority and how to add that into their lives, how to make their lives more joyful and less busy, that is the biggest joy for me. And also to gain that confidence that they're doing everything they can for their health, for their future, without having to have a fear of recurrence.
Mm.
That really is the biggest.
And I also think making people realize that these things are all intertwined.
Oh, absolutely. You know,
all these elements, the psychological, the physical, the emotional, the mental, the spiritual, they're all tied together. And there's not just, you know, like I say, once you're given the all clear, the physical side's almost like, yep, tick box, that's done. But there's so much else that's still hanging around that needs to be
That's right.
Dealt
and
with.
Also not just, well, just, I don't want to belittle it, absolutely not. You know, how you then feel following the treatment, as you said earlier, that is really tough. But also that there might have been sort of built up trauma before the diagnosis, you know, that we just sort of package and put to the side.
Yeah.
So, yes, it has got many sides to it. Yeah.
So do you also support the partners? Do they factor into this in some way? If there's a woman that's gone through this and come out the other end, and, you know, is there a support network for a husband or a boyfriend?
I don't do that as much, but there is networks out there.
Okay.
There is support groups for partners in particular. There is, yeah.
Because I've not been through that, but I guess it must be hard for them. Mm-hmm. And certainly talking to Pete on last week's show, he lost his wife.
Mm-hmm.
She was 37 when she died of cervical cancer. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the support network for the people, not that are left behind, because we're talking here cases where, you know, the woman's had a diagnosis, been through the treatment and come out the other end. Mm-hmm. But psychologically and mentally for the partner of that lady, it must also be really draining and hard for them as well.
Absolutely. No, you're right. Yeah. No, there is some charities out there that support family members. It's big. You're right. Yeah.
That's good. Okay, so obviously we're coming towards the end of 2019 now, and how quick the year has gone. So looking forward into 2020, what are your plans for the coming 12 months or so?
Yes. So I'm building my one-to-one coaching practice, but I also offer a sort of intense one-month programs for women to come on. And so it's a sort of small group programs. I do all my work online.
Okay.
So that women can join from their own homes. And I do small group programs that run 1 month, where I go through all the five essentials, the five shifts, and support women also one-to-one through that program. And I am working on a self-guided, completely recorded online course, also going through the five essentials,
wow,
giving all the advice.
Exciting times.
Needed. Yeah, really exciting. Yeah, so, I'm really looking forward.
Do you have an ultimate goal? Do you have an ultimate mission? Is there, you know, what's the thing that gets you up in the morning and motivates,
yes,
you to keep going? What's...
Oh, dear, I've got a big goal.
Go.
I really want this knowledge, this confidence that through lifestyle changes, we can create massive changes in our health and well-being. I'm sure, as you know, too, with the work you do, there is so much we can do. We don't need to feel victims to disease. You know, as terrible as it is, there is a way forward.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, it's big. You know, when people can look after themselves, when people can make lifestyle changes and believe in them, I think that will have a massive ripple effect,
yeah,
in terms of the health and well-being of our planet, really.
Absolutely. So Sabine, in summary, for listeners out there or people that maybe that they know, who are you looking for? Who are the people that should come and have a chat with you?
Yes. So I support women with a diagnosis for breast cancer. And that could either be somebody who's just been diagnosed and doesn't want to walk this journey on their own, or it could be women who have completed active treatment and are now in this difficult situation of, mm-hmm, looking for back to normal and looking for the new normal, really, rather than going back to normal. So women who feel lonely, who need that support, who don't know where they're at, who,
yep,
feel confused by information, that's my ideal client.
And what's the best way for them to contact you?
Okay, so on social media, I am the Breast Cancer Coach on Facebook and on Instagram.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, definitely via social media and otherwise also via email.
Mm-hmm.
I am sabina.cancercoach@gmail.com.
Okay.
That's another option.
Okay. Yeah. And what I'll do for you in the post-show promotion, I'll put some of those links on so people can click through and make contact with you.
Yeah.
It's been really good to chat with you, Sabine. It's been really fascinating to find out more about your story and your journey. And I think what you're trying to do in bringing that awareness and helping women that have been through this experience, I think it's fantastic. And I wish you every success for the future.
Thank you so much.
Time has caught up with us. I was going to cover the topic of vitamin A as well today, but what we'll do is I'll carry that forward to the next show. I'll also probably cover vitamin B at the same time. But it was a great interview. Again, I'd like to thank Sabine for coming on the show. And it's been really interesting to find out more about your journey, Sabine. Thank you.
You're very welcome. Thank you for having me.
So we're going to wrap the show up now. It's almost time for the final song, but a quick reminder of my website, which is www.i-nutrition.co.uk. You can contact me through the website, but you can also listen to previous shows on the website too. And if you'd like to come on the show, as Sabine has done today, and talk about your journey, your experience, and how you help people, if you operate in the health and well-being industry under that umbrella, then please make contact with me and we'll get you on a future show. And if you've got any questions for me personally, again, please do contact me through my website. So after the last song, we have the Channel Radio News and Weather. But all that's left for me to do is to bid you a great week ahead. Have a great week. Stay happy. Stay healthy. And I will catch you the same time next week.